Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1 for Autumn Semester 2016. Lecture 10, delivered on September 22, 2016. The title of this lecture is Annuities and Perpetuities.
Today, annuities and perpetuities and applications. Now, as I told you, an annuity is a fancy term for of cash flow. So if you're making payments on a loan, what you are doing is you have established an annuity that the lender receives over the life of the loan. Now, actually, a bond is an annuity as well, because it's going to pay a coupon for a period of years, and then at the end it's going to pay one last coupon payment and the $1,000 of the face value back and retire the bond. So that's an annuity as well. Annuities happen in all kinds of ways. One of the classics, people think of annuities oftentimes in terms of retirement benefits or your retirement check. When you retire, you get an annuity for the rest of your life. And as I told you, there is a crisis coming that is going to just be, it's going to rock civilization here in the United States as we face the fact that we did not fund a lot of these annuities, these retirement programs, nearly well enough. And it's kind of funny because not too far along, you'll be able to calculate what should have been the funding levels for some of these annuities. And you could actually figure out for yourself in your own company, wherever they're whatever they're providing as far as the retirement benefits plan, how it's going to play out. Can they fund these annuities or not, that they're going to be paying to the retirees over the next 50, 100 years? But the crisis is going to come quite a bit before that. Okay, there's another animal out there, and it sounds at first blush like it's not going to have too many applications, but it actually does. It's called a perpetuity. A perpetuity is an annuity that goes on forever. A perpetuity is an annuity, eternal annuity. Now, we usually work in terms of two different types. There is the level perpetuity, the same amount every year, forever, or every period, forever and ever and ever. And then there is another animal, which would be the constant growth perpetuity. Now, there are obviously other perpetuities that would have unlevel growth forever or unlevel cash flow. Those get to be painful. Fortunately, spreadsheets are around to work those out pretty well these days. But anyway, okay. A level perpetuity would be one that pays the same amount of money every year forever. For example, when a scholarship is endowed at a university or a college, wherever, oftentimes there will be a specific amount of money put into it. And then every year forever after that, an amount can be pulled out for scholarships. You get a great scholarship here because you're such a brilliant student. So you would get, let's say, a $5,000 a year check for your 4 years. And then when your scholarship years were over, then you would get a $5,000 check, et cetera, et cetera. It would go on forever and ever. The question would be, how much would have to be put into that perpetuity for that check to be written every year, presumably forever? So the first one that we would want to do, the level perpetuity, would be the cash flow, the present value. how much has to be put in right now for this thing to happen, would be the cash flow divided by the discount rate on the perpetuity. That's all there is to it. It's a simple calculation. Now, there's an old term for this discount rate here. You might run into, actually, in something you do. And I remember this term. It was a term that was used in real estate. And even a few years ago, I heard it again. It was called the cap rate or the capitalization rate. I was asking, all right, suppose that we wanted to fund a financial analysis institute and have it have a fund of $100,000, have a budget of $100,000 a year. How much would we have to ask from donors to get that to happen? And the person I was working with just said, well, let's assume a cap rate of 5%. Okay, well, in other words, that would be how much this the bank account would pay to be able to achieve this. Okay, now, the level of perpetuity, the present value of it. So let's say, what if we wanted to find out of $5,000, how much would have to be put in so that the next year, and this would have to be the next year, if we were to be able to put this amount of money, this endowment, into a 5% per year account forever. There's nothing hard about it. It's just $100,000. Is that right? 20 times 5. Yeah, $100,000. And that would fund a scholarship of $5,000 a year forever. And so there's an application, a practical application of a level perpetuity right there. And there are plenty of other ones as well. But that gives you an idea that these actually are not useless. There's another application too. It has to do with equity. Equity means ownership in a company, right? Okay. Now, there are a couple of different kinds of equity that you can own. Common stock is one. Do you know another kind of equity you can own in a company? Maybe not, maybe. It's called preferred stock. Now, preferred stock is a little unusual these days. It used to be quite popular. Preferred stock is ownership. It has a residual claim to cash flows after the bills have been paid, like common stock does. However, its dividend is not at the discretion of the board of directors. The dividend is stated on the stock certificate itself. It's usually stated as a percentage of the par value of the stock. So you see XYZ prefer 1.2% preferred, par value $40 per share. So that would mean that this paid 1.2% of $40 every year forever. Now, it would be paid before any dividend on common stock would be paid. Preferred has to get its dividend first. Now, if it's cumulative preferred, any dividends that have not been paid to the preferred must be caught up completely before common stock can be given a dividend. That's preferred stock. It's almost, if you think about it, it's like a permanent, it's like a forever bond. You get a coupon like a bond, except that you get this coupon forever and ever and ever. Let me write one down. SLB 1.2% cumulative preferred par value $40 per share. This is an equity instrument. It used to be really popular for investments in fixed income funds, for safe investing for older people. All right, you are nearing retirement, sir. Okay? Now, you're no longer the wild and crazy guy that you were in your youth. You don't do things, you know, you're not crazy. You don't go to insane clown posse concerts.
You eat Metamucil every morning and Activia just to feel better. You don't invest crazy. You want to put it into things that are just going to pay you a check every year. Okay? This would be the kind of thing that you would be interested in. Preferred used to have a really good reputation as an investment for older people, for low-risk investors, institutional investors who didn't want a lot of risk in their investments. It was big stuff. Companies issued preferred a lot. The strangest thing is, though, and this has happened, I don't know, sometime in maybe the last 10, 15 years, it lost its luster. I don't know why, but it's like, I was up at a place in Wheaton. It was one of those places that creates financial products for brokers to sell to investors. And, you know, put together different stocks, put stocks and bonds together, create packages, and then an investor could sell it, could convince his clients, this is a great product, it has this yield. And I just asked, well, you know, you're trying to create all these low-risk instruments that have large cash payments but not any chance of a dividend growth. Why don't you put it, you're talking about everything except preferred stock. Why not? Oh, well, no one buys preferred stock. No one uses preferred stock anymore. And it was just like dismissing one of the classic instruments of safe investing. There, it's still being issued. I mean, where I see a lot of it these days is in real estate trusts. Real estate investment trusts will sell a lot of preferred stock and to raise capital rather than common stock. Who knew? I mean, there are still sectors where it's done. But you understand that this stock probably won't go up or down in value very much over its life because its entire cash flow pattern is on that 1.2% of $40, which means that you would take 40 times 0.012 to get how much money? Well, what is that? 48 cents, is that? Okay. 48 cents. So, essentially, this is a perpetuity. Forever, it will pay its owner 48 cents every year per share. So if you bought like 100,000 shares of this, 100,000 shares, you get a $48,000 a year check, I think. Yeah, something like that. Essentially, it's like a guarantee, almost. It's not a guarantee. Look, if the company goes tap city, the preferred goes belly up with the common. If there's anything left over after the debt holders have gotten their mitts on it, the preferred would get its share first. And if the company gets into cash flow trouble, it can't pay common dividends. It still has to pay its preferred dividends. And if it doesn't pay this 48 cents every year, even if it's in trouble, it has to catch up all the years that it didn't pay it before it can start paying dividends to the common shareholders again. So you see why this is kind of a safer instrument. It's not as safe as a bond. It does have a little speculative value, but, you know, whatever. Okay, let me show you one. In this case, let's say that the discount rate for SLB preferred is 1.0%. This is a very low discount rate because this is a very safe investment. So what I would do is I would apply the level of perpetuity formula. The price value of this would be the 48 cents divided by 0.01. And so the price would come out to be $48 per share. I just priced a share of stock. This share of stock sells a little above the par. See the par is 40? it's paying 48 because this dividend is a little sweeter at 1.2% than the market says it needs to be. So this share of preferred sells at a premium to par. Make sure you see that. Make sure you understand that. The market says this is about the risk level of a 1% security. Okay. Well, this actual preferred pays 1.2%. So it's a little sweeter. So this is going to attract investors like honey attracts bees because it pays a little more than it needs to. And as the investors pour in to buy it, they'll push the price up a little above par. Not a lot above par, but a little above par. Now, suppose, on the other hand, that this discount rate, the market said, we would really like, this is risky on a level of about 1.5%. Notice how I'm using discount rates, cap rates, as a metric of risk, which is what markets do. They use betas in the background, but implicitly they're using these two. So in this case, the price value of the SLB preferred would be 48 cents per share, the perpetual cash flow, level per cash flow, divided by 0.015. And I'm not even going to try that. I'm going to put that right on my calculator. 0.48 divided by 0.015, $32 a share. I thought that was what it was, but I wasn't going to take a chance. This time, it's selling at a discount to par. The market says this is risky on a level of about 1.5%, but because the dividend is only 1.2%, investors will pull away from this, pulling its price down until it reaches equilibrium at about $32 a share. But preferred stock is relatively straightforward to price. It's a clean investment. You can price it. Honestly, the price of preferred, when I showed you that $48 a share and that $32 a share, realistically, that would be kind of extraordinary. Most of the time, preferred stock floats in a band within a couple of bucks of its par value. It doesn't go up permanently. It doesn't go down permanently. It's a relatively flat investment on capital gain. You make your money off this stream of dividends. It's a perpetuity. That's a classic example of a level perpetuity. They're kind of nice. And there are other ones, too, that are level perpetuities. I was trying to think. I mean, technically, I don't want to get into that too much. But one thing is for sure is that we do want like to calculate level perpetuities. If we say, all right, you want to invest money, you're going to retire. Let's say you're going to retire at 60. And you want to have, $50,000 a year, every year after that. And then when you die, you want to be able to put it into an endowed trust for someone in your family or to some other place that will still get $50,000 a year after that forever. That's where we would use a level perpetuity formula to do the calculation. Of course, it'd be way out there in the future, and then we'd have to do present value of it and all that. Now, the next one, the constant growth perpetuity. The price value, the present value of that one, is the cash flow at period one over K minus G, where cash flow at period one is the cash flow, the cash flow right now grown one period, and G is the growth rate of the cash flow. You have to watch it. Watch it in the problems that are in the homework and on the quiz and tests. if you're given the current cash flow, the current amount, you have to grow it one period for this formula to work. For its value now, you have to use one period out on the numerator. Just don't ever forget to do that. There is a classic place where this constant growth perpetuity is used. It has to do with something that sounds completely theoretical, but it's quite practical. And I'm going to have to tell someone something that's probably going to might bother you a little bit. Sir, you're going to die someday. No, you are. It will probably hurt like hell. You'll bitch and you'll moan, and then you'll finally shut up and die. I hate to tell you that. Yeah. Enjoy your life now that you know that, okay? Okay. Now, I'm telling you that for a very specific reason. Corporations are not people. Corporations theoretically live forever. By their design, by the law itself, they live forever. Now, they can die from stupidity, from technological obsolescence, whatever you want, but there is not a mortality. You've got a clock inside you. I can hear it. Tick, 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 tick. And someday, and you're going to die. You don't hear that clock ticking in a corporation. It isn't there. Again, a corporation can die. Most do. But they don't have to. And I can't emphasize that enough, because there was this Supreme Court ruling a few years back where the Supreme Court ruled that corporations have the rights under the Constitution of citizens. That was a complete misunderstanding. There's such a fundamental difference between a corporation and a human that you cannot apply the same concept of rights to something that is immortal. But the Supreme Court did what it did because they're a bunch of dumbasses when it comes to business law. There we go. Why I'm telling you that is that if a corporation is paying a dividend, now this is the thing though, it has to be paying a dividend. If it is paying a dividend, we can work on some reasonable assumptions. Well, we can see the dividend now. We can see the corporate growth rate of dividends. What seems to be the corporation's target growth rate? And it's actually kind of notable. You can look through 10K over the past 5 years, whatever, and you can see that the dividend is growing almost always. Corporations are growing their dividend in a very specific pattern. There is a growth rate you can see from year to year. It might vary just a little bit up and down, but it's almost, most corporations strive to have a dividend policy that includes a constant growth rate, because this gives a certainty for investors that the growth rate is going to continue. It might not be some spectacular, we're not talking about a 50% growth rate in dividends per year. No, you don't want that. That would scare me if I saw that. But we do see a growth rate in the dividend. And from that, I can assume that if you are truly a long-term owner, you essentially are buying a constant growth perpetuity when you buy a share of common stock. Yeah, you might sell it down the line, but you don't have to in order to realize value. And I'm going to pull one up here, pull some of the numbers out of my backside for this, but at the same time, you'll see that this actually can work to find the price of a share of common stock. Again, you'll need to know the growth rate, and you can look in the 10K. Was that, geez, silly. No grabbing. Why is it so dark in here? Did I just have a stroke? There.
Yeah, at my age, you worry about things like that. Okay, here. There's CVS. And I'm just pulling one up out of nowhere. And for this one, I do know the K. And I'm going to show you how you can get the K. It's called the Capital Asset Pricing Model, and I'll be showing you that in just a couple of weeks. It's a way that you can pull out the discount rate, the cap rate, for this constant growth model. Now, this is CVS, and I actually don't know if this is going to work or not, so I could make a real fool of myself. But that's the way I like to do these, to show you that it's sometimes it doesn't work out by theory. But I'm going to look, and I see that the dividend on this is $1.70. Is that what it is? $1.70? Well, yeah, don't help me out there. Okay, $1.70. So the cash flow of CVS cash flow right now is $1.70 a year. Now, I do know that this one has a growth rate of approximately 4% on the dividend. At least I thought I saw that somewhere. Approximately 4%. And this is kind of going to be inexact here. I also know that the cap rate for CVS is somewhere around 5.8%. Kind of pulling these out, their estimates on the fly estimates. But what I'm curious, and I'm actually kind of curious about this myself, what is the price that the constant growth perpetuity formula would give me for this stock? Okay, well, first things first is I have to use the growth rate the dividend one period out. So that would be $1.70 grown one period. 1.70 times 1 plus 0.04. I have to have that. Okay, now the next thing that I would need, well, I guess I can just sort of throw it into the formula now. The price value of CVS Common right now is the present value of that perpetual stream of constantly growing dividends should be $1.70 times 1 plus 0.04 over the quantity 0.058 less 0.04. Pushing that in, let me see what happens here. I'd have 1.7 times 1.04 divided by, open parentheses, 0.058 less 0.04, close the parentheses. Well, spank me. Huh. I get $98.22. Not too bad. Market right now says it's $90.42. My guess would be that discount rate that I was using was a little bit, it was more than a few weeks old on that. I would imagine that it's probably, now that interest rates are beginning to slip up a little bit, it's probably closer to about 0.059 at this point, but that was the last one I had. So that's pricing this security as nothing but a constant growth perpetuity on the dividends of it. And with any stock, you can do this as long as it pays dividends. If it doesn't pay dividends, you got to go to other methods that are a lot more like work. But this is a way that you can actually get a ballpark on where the price of the stock is right now. Kind of interesting on that one, though, because at 90.47, let me see something here, just out of curiosity on this one. Let me look at the year-to-date. Yeah. That's where it is. There we go. You see it? That was where I had when I had the discount rate of 5.8%. That was consistent with the price back there. Since then, the price has slid.
So that's a good example of what's happening with rising interest rates. Interest rates are beginning to push upward a little bit. That's going to cause the denominators to get bigger here, which will suppress the prices of the stock, the securities. And again, let me make sure that you see what I've just said there. Interest rates are beginning to push upward because there is a sentiment that, yeah, interest rates have got to come up here. The Fed's going to move and the markets are going to push interest rates up because there will be increasing pressure on capital, demands for capital. So in other words, the K in K minus G is going to start growing for all companies. And as the K goes up, the K minus G goes up, as long as G stays constant, which will begin to cause the prices of stocks to go down. And as you can see in the case of CVS here, when its K was about 5.8 on a risk-adjusted basis, yeah, the price was about $98. But now the interest rates have begun to go up, that K is probably up more like 5.9%. And so because that's just a very small amount of increase in interest rates, but at the same time, that's enough for interest rate-sensitive securities to cause the price to begin to ease back, to pull back. So there you go, another practical understanding that you can get from the idea of this perpetuity formula, the constant growth perpetuity formula. It indicates that stock prices, for at least dividend-paying stocks, stock prices are sensitive to the cap rate on the stock, and the cap rate is going to be affected proportionately as macroeconomic interest rates change. So in other words, as interest rates go up, K is going to go up, so this numerator is going to go up, so the prices of stocks are going to begin to slide back, ease back. It's not a hard amount, but it's enough to make it noticeable that, yeah, this is probably, we are past the peak on stock prices. And from here, it's not going to be all boats are rising. It's going to be you have to be more careful about your investments to make sure that the capital gains are going to be realized. In other words, in a market where everything is going up because interest rates are going down, everyone's a genius. Everyone's a hero at investing. It's when interest rates aren't doing that, when they start to slide back from that heady, all stocks are rising, that you begin to show whether you're really a smart investor or not. Because then is when you can't just buy anything and win. You have to buy the right things if you want to win. Anyway. But that just gives you an idea. Now, let me point out something interesting here, just to make sure that you know another point that I made. NFLX. Netflix doesn't pay a dividend, so this constant perpetuity formula isn't going to do any good for you on a Netflix kind of stock. Yeah, you know, so you have to, and we'll go to other methods, and I'll show you other methods for this kind of a stock. But one like a doesn't pay a dividend, interestingly enough. So Google would be something that you would have to price by other means, and it gets to be really complicated when you have a monster corporation like that. Apple does. And if you look at Apple's 10Ks for the last 5 years, it is clear as a bell that they have a constant growth dividend policy. It's the same growth rate, virtually down to the 100th decimal place every year on that dividend. That gives investors a high level of confidence that if they invest in this, they know that they will get a specific dividend every year and that that dividend will go up by the same amount every year. Now, I've brought this up before, and I'll bring it up again for you. Dividends are a curse for a company because a lot of investors are going to bitch at you if you don't pay a dividend. But once you start paying a dividend, two things are going to happen. One is, once you pay a dividend, it is going to be expected that you keep paying that dividend. If you ever don't pay that dividend, the market is going to give you a paddling. Because essentially it's like that gets to be their expectation. And they will whip you hard if, well, we really don't want to pay a dividend this time because we've got some major projects we want to invest in. Ah, that's not going to fly. The other thing is what I've just shown you here. Once you start paying a dividend, there is going to be an expectation that that dividend will have a growth pattern to it. It's not just that you're going to pay a dividend. You're going to have to keep feeding that dividend a little bit of a bump every year, or the market's going to paddle you. If the market begins by thinking, oh, this company's going to have a growth rate of 4% in the dividend. 10% minus 4% is 6%. That's nice. You don't do that for them. You don't give them that growth that they're expecting. That goes away, and then you're dividing not by 10% minus 4%. You're dividing by 10%. So that stock price is going to go boom like that on you. So, and again, dividends are the curse of a company. You should pay them unless you're really, really a high growth, impressive company. And once you pay them, you've got to start growing the dividend, and that growth rate had better be something close to a constant growth rate. Because if it's all over the place, the market's going to not like that at all. So keep that in mind when you're out there and you own, you're the big wig in a Fortune 500 company. Or not. Okay. Anyway. Say, go ahead. In fact, I should probably bring that up right now. I keep kind of sliding by this. Companies can have different classes of stock, Class A and Class B common stock. That typically happens when a company has an inside family that wants to control the stock. So the Class A common would have super voting rights for the board, 10 votes per share, whereas the common stock that you would own in that company would have one voting share. So in other words, you're never going to have a say in this corporation. You're just going to sit back for the ride. That's a very unfortunate thing, to the extent that a family can be very good in stewardship from generation to generation, or it can be not so good from generation to generation. There are examples of both. But if you buy Class B common, because that's the one that the common people can have, you better know that you just don't get to have a say in that company. You're never going, oh, I got a vote for the board of directors. No, it doesn't matter because the family has the super voting rights. Do you know of any companies that have that kind of family voting on the inside? Yeah. Who else? Car company? Wait. Give me a second. Finance. That's a class, that's the one you can have. You can't have the other one. You can't have that. Now, it does not mean that companies with Class A and Class B are all prone to suckitude. Some of them are actually okay. Truth be told, there was a war that happened between the inside the family, the Packard family, and the outsiders. The Packards had allowed their inside voting power to erode over time. And once that happened, the company got taken over by unfortunate outsiders who essentially wrecked the reputation of the company and then had to spend millions and millions to completely rewrite the story of the company to cover up what they had done. And the legacy of that was not good. It would have been better if the inside family, using it in its wisdom, had been able to keep that from happening. But there you go. That happens sometimes. Walmart is an unfortunate company in the sense that, as I had told you before, there was a real need for new blood to come into that company. for that company to find a new birth in an era when they are not the, we're not the only big box retailer, which is the reality now. But instead, they went with one of their kids as the new CEO, head of the company, instead of seeking outside talent to bring the company forward into the 21st century. We'll see how that goes, and I do not give investment advice, but on for my own purposes, Walmart is a long-term sell, not even a hold. But that's, again, I do not give investment advice. But
let me throw a quick dirty problem at you, just some perpetuity stuff like you see in the homework. I've left you kind of hanging deliberately long enough with some of the homework, but here's one that I'd start off with a simple one. You want to endow a chair at ISU. The chair will be paid $225,000 a year and have a budget for grad students, research stuff, and travel of $80,000 per year. You want to ensure that the total budget will increase by 6% per year. The chair will be hired in 1 year. How much must the endowment be right now? I'll tell you how practical this is. For a long time, ISU was behind the curve on fundraising. It has done magnificently in the last few years under a very dynamic individual named Norris. So there's catch-up. There's a lot of catch-up to do, but he's doing a great job. And one of the things you do is you go to very rich people, very rich families, and you say, "You graduated from here. We would like you to create a legacy here." And there will be different ways they can create a legacy. They can have a room named after them. They can have this, that, or the other thing named after them. But the biggie is to endow a chair. And it gets a name, the family name, the John Smith Chair of Marketing or whatever. And this is how you have to do it. Sometimes a family will come to you and they'll say, "Okay, we want to endow a chair. How much is it going to cost for us to do that?" This is the calculation that is done right there on a calculator very quickly to accomplish this. The first thing you have to know is how much is going to be
earned in interest in the money that's put into the bank to create the cash flow. The problem is, I mean, it's just a nightmare now, is that interest rates are so darn low. On the upside, though, when you go to a bank, okay, here it is. Okay, sir, you go to a bank. I'm the banker. And you come in, I'd like to start a checking account, sir. Okay, that's very good. How much are you going to be putting in? Well, I got $12 in my pocket now, and I've got a check for $102 a month. I'm going to be putting that in. So I expect a few freebies here, you know, like some pens and a toaster and all that. Well, yes, okay. So I'll be nice to him. You come in. I got $12 million to put in your bank. Well, you know what I'm going to do? First, I'm going to ask you to remove your shoes so I can kiss your feet. You know, and I'm going to bow to you and say I'm not worthy of your contempt. You're going to get a lot more attention. And you'll get a better rate. You know, for you, you're going to be lucky if I don't charge you fees, you know, for wearing shirts that ugly. No, anyway. I'm kidding. That's nice. Yeah, really nice. But you, I mean, I'll do what I can to give you a decent rate because I know interest rates are going to go up eventually, and so I will establish it on a forward understanding that I'm going to make money off you in the long run by giving you a better interest rate now so you don't go to another bank to do this. Okay, so what I would say is in a case like this, I'm probably looking at about for a very long term where they're going to put this money in essentially forever into this, and all I as a banker have to do is pump the money out, this $305,000 every year with the growth of 6% in it. But you see, here's the problem. I can't do 5.5%. Do you see why I can't do 5.5%? Look at what I'm guaranteeing the growth rate of this is. So what I have to do is I have to say, all right, you've negotiated this. Okay, we're going to have to bust our butts and figure out how to do this, but we're going to do growth rate plus one basis point. I'll have to. Because if I go at the growth rate, 5.5%, but it's growing at 6%, I get killed. I go bankrupt as a banker. So what I have to do is figure out how to make this happen with an investment product that will give me more than 6%. Go.
So you're saying that A must be bigger than B?
Oh, yeah. If you get a negative, essentially, yeah, it's like you break the internet. You can't have a negative K minus G. I'm glad you brought it up that way. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So I've got to make this happen. And believe me, for this kind of an endowment, I will make it happen if I have to sell my mama. Okay, so essentially, the price value is going to be $305,000 starting in 1 year divided by, notice that this is in 1 year this is going to happen. So I don't have to do the 1 plus G times it because that's the understanding, that's the starting point in 1 year is 305,000. Over 0.065 less 0.06. So now I've got to get the price value, what the endowment would have to be to make this happen. And it's going to be $305,000 divided by 0.005. Holy cats. God. Ouch. That's what you have to do. That's what would have to happen for a chair. Just to endow a chair would be that much. Is there something weird sound? What is that? It's like, are they gassing us? That's awfully loud. For
actually, it's not the worst one. There's some room here in the winter. The wind goes through and it makes the room howl like some kind of tormented ghost. But anyway, imagine what this means in terms of what we have to gather in terms of funding for these kinds of things like chairs, a specially endowed chair. Think of what it means to actually endow a building. In a case like, suppose, well, we've got the State Farm Hall of Business. That's the name of the building. But what if we wanted someone to endow the College of Business? Keeping in mind that in 1980, about 85% of our funding came from the state. We'll be lucky if we stay above 10% in the next 2 years, which means that we have basically are out there selling our bodies on the street to corporate America. It's just what we have to do now. We're not state funded anymore. So if we have if we want, say, the College of Business and all of its faculty and all of that to be funded one way or another, by student tuition, maybe half of it student tuition, the other half by corporate giving and endowments. Imagine what it would be, what we would ask for the name of the College of Business itself. Not for the building, we've already done that one. For the name of the College of Business. What would we have to do for, let's say, Taco Bell College of Business? You're right, the Chipotle, or something serious like Discover College of Business or the J.P. Morgan College of Business, you would have to ask for an awful lot of money. It would reach a level that would be staggering on the to fund half of a college here at ISU. But there's where we're headed. And if we don't do it, we will be jacking up your tuition through the roof. Which is creates all kinds of problems doing that. But that gives you an idea. For a lousy $305,000 a year, growing at 6%, we would have to get an endowment of $61 million. If we wanted to get something that would cost if we wanted something that would run about $60, $70 million a year in faculty salaries, grad students, facilities, and all of that, think of what that would cost us. And even dropping the growth rate so that we're paying not growing the budget. But if you were to say, all right, let's say that it would run a budget of $80 million, to run a college at a university, and we wanted to have half of that not paid by students, and we wanted to grow the facility by, let's say, a modest 4% per year on a cap rate of 6.5% per year, let's see what that would cost us as far as getting someone to do that, getting a giver, getting a corporation to become. So we are selling ourselves to a corporation. So we are J.P. Morgan. Let's say we finally break down. Okay, fine. Olive Garden. Okay. It's not the worst thing. The fettuccine Alfredo, it doesn't suck, man. Okay? The Olive Garden College of Business, you would need $40 million endowed, or rather per year, divided by 0.065, what we could invest at, less a growth rate of the cash flow of $80 million at 4%. 0.025, God, this is going to be an awful number. This is just going to make me break my heart. $40 million divided by 0.025. Holy cow. 100,000.
$1.6 billion is what the commitment would have to be. $1.6 billion. And believe me, if we're going to ask for $1.6 billion to make this university strong, to make the College of Business strong, we aren't talking about just being their slaves. We're talking about being Taco Bell's bitch. Or whoever we would sell it to, quite honestly. This gives you an idea of the challenge, but also what I'm trying to do is not scare you. We'll get it done, one way or the other. Come hell or high water, we'll get it done. We'll figure out how to keep things going and keep them going well. We're on a roll here, quite honestly. But what I'm trying to show you is that this formula comes to life. This stupid little perpetuity formula happens. Now, the interesting thing, though, is that forward planning can be part of this as well. If I know, someone of your age, about 2021, I'll make it easy for myself and say, you want to retire in 40 years. So 40 years out, you want to retire. So at age 61, you want to retire. So I'm going to say, all right, here at year 60, you want enough in the bank so that you can collect a perpetuity after that, 61, 62, and then endow it to someone else and maybe even endow it to ISU. So that it would become part of our legacy. That's what often happens. People have some kind of a perpetuity that they're living on in their old age. And what they do is after their death, they bequeath at least part of it to the university. It's part of the thing that we do. But anyway, let's say that you want to live and have 80 grand a year. And let's say that you want to grow that by 5%. Every year. But you want to know how much you would have to put into it now to have that happen. Okay, the first thing that you would want to do is you would want to say, what is the value right now, starting at 80,000 at age 61? So you would say 80,000, and let's say that you're going to invest the money at 5.25% in a passbook savings account. 5.25%. Minus 5% growth rate of your cash flow. That covers you for inflation and adds a little extra every year for some extras as you get older. So the present value of that would be 0.0025 in the denominator. That would be 80 divided by 0.0025 equals... Ouch. So you, holy cow, that's a lot. Okay. So you would want $32 million there. Wow. That's a lot right there. To create a perpetuity. Okay. So. You see where that number comes from that I told you. Remember I told you a while back that in order for you to be comfortable in your retirement, you would need about $30 million? I don't know if I told you that or not, but that's where that number comes from. For you to be very comfortable, 80 grand is not that much. By the time you're that old, it's actually not going to be that's going to be fairly modest, but at least you're comfortable. $32 million is what you need in order to have a perpetuity, because the unfortunate part is that you're going to live a lot longer than people nowadays do. You will probably live into your hundreds, 105, 110, except for you. You have a very dangerous lifestyle. So that's a little bit scary to think about. $32 million so that you can kick off a perpetuity that doesn't have an end. You'll get $80,000 a year with a 5% growth rate for as long as you live, and it could be a very long time after you retire. That's that number. So keep that number in mind as you start working. 32 million, 32 million, 32 million. That's what you need, okay? Now, fortunately, you don't need that for 40 years. So what we can do now is we can take that 40 million and 32 million, the present value now, taking that 32 million back to now 1 plus, and we would do that times 1 plus, and the risk, you would put that, let's say, into a passbook savings account to the negative 40th power. Let's see what it's worth now, how much you would have to put in now to have that happen. If I did that, and all I'm doing here is I'm just showing you like how they do it in the homeworks and the quizzes, just playing with the formula, just think about what you have to accomplish. So right now, I would say times 1.0525 to the negative 40th power $4,133,003. $4,133,033. Approximately, you'd have to put it into the bank now to accomplish it. Ouch! Still bad. You got that much to put in? You're no fun anymore. Okay, there's another way we could do it. What if we say, let's create a payment pattern? Let's create a payment pattern here. Let me do this. Hang on. Bear with me. Okay. Let's ask, okay, let's take it back out to that 32 million and let's start thinking about this as an annuity. Let's see if we can figure out what payment would have to be put into an annuity to have a future value of $4,133,000. So in other words, the next thing that we are going to try to accomplish here is to say, all right, there's no way I'm going to put $4 million into the bank right now and let it grow to $32 million. It ain't going to happen. But what if we were to ask ourselves, out here at year 60, we want $32 million in it. Let's start putting money in to a future value. In 1 year, 21, 22, say you're 20 right now, 21, 22, 23, etc., clear out here. And we're going to put in our first amount right here, okay? Deposit, and the last deposit will be on our 60th birthday. The last deposit, okay? So we're going to have the same deposit every year until 60, and we want it to have $32 million at 60. So this is clearly a future value. The only thing you have to ask, is this a future value ordinary, or is this a future value due? Is this an ordinary annuity or an annuity due? If you do your first payment in 1 year and your last payment when you start collecting, annuity ordinary or annuity due? Say it. It's ordinary. Because if the payments occur at the end of the period, it's an ordinary annuity. If they occur at the beginning of the period, it's an annuity due. So in this case, we're going to calculate this as an annuity due because we're going to assume you don't have the money to put into the bank for your first payment right now. That's the only reason I'm doing it this way. So in other words, as far as the calculator goes, I'm not going to do it. So all I'm going to do here is I'm going to say, all right, we're going to have 40 payments into this. Whoops, let me reset. 40 payments. Okay? We are going to put it into a passbook savings account that is 5.25% per year. And we want a future value on that of $32 million. Now, this is an ordinary annuity, so we don't hit the begin key. And now we're going to find out what we have to get, compute the payment, how much we're going to have to make each of the payments. Son-in-law, you've got to be kidding me. It sucks to be you. That's your annual payment to be able to achieve your hopes and dreams. You got to be kidding me. Ouch. $250,000 a year for you to live modestly in your old age. That is theory stepping right out of a calculator into your real lives. And I, wow, ouch. But that's what you're facing. You are facing that prospect. You got to get started right now, $250,000 a year for the next 40 years for you to retire at 60. Now, you can extend the calculation. Oh, I'll retire at 70. Or I'll retire at 80. I'll shoot myself when I'm 90. One way or the other, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.